Chapter 15. Are one of those precipitantly fond things who are yearning to throw away their hearts upon the first worthless fellow who says good morning. In the first place, you shouldn't have loved him so quickly. In the next, if you must have loved him offhand, you should have concealed it. It tickled his vanity. Why, Jove, that girl's in love with me already, he thought. Apostrophe, to hasten away at the end of the toilet, to tell Mrs. Morris, who stood waiting in a little room prepared for her, with tea poured out, bread and butter cut in two diaphanous slices, and eggs arranged, that she wanted no breakfast. Then to shut herself alone in her bedroom, was her only thought. She was followed thither by the well-intentioned matron with a cup of tea and one piece of bread and butter on a tray, cheerfully insisting that she should eat it. To those who grieve, innocent cheerfulness seems heartless levity. No, thank you, Mrs. Morris, apostrophe she said, keeping the door closed. Despite the incivility of the action, Cytherea could not bear to let a pleasant person see her face then. Immediate revocation, even if revocation would be more effective by postponement, is the impulse of young wounded natures. Cytherea went to her blotting book, took out the long letter so carefully written, so full of gushing remarks and tender hints, and sealed up so neatly with a little seal bearing good faith as its motto, tore the missive into 50 pieces, and threw them into the grate. It was then the bitterest of anguishes, to look upon some of the words as he had so lovingly written, and see them existing only in mutilated forms without meaning to feel, that is, I would never read them, nobody ever know how ardently as he had penned them. Pity for oneself for being wasted is mostly present in these moods of abnegation. The meaning of all his allusions, his abruptness in telling her of his love, his constraint at first, then his desperate manner of speaking, was clear. They must have been the last flickerings of a conscience not quite dead to all sense of perfidiousness and fickleness. Now he had gone to London. She would be dismissed from his memory, in the same way as Miss Aldclyffe had said. And here she was in Edward's own parish, reminded continually of him by what she saw and heard. The landscape, yesterday so much, and so bright to her, was now but as the banquet hall deserted, all gone but herself. Miss Aldclyffe had wormed her secret out of her, and would now be continually mocking her for her trusting simplicity in believing him. It was altogether unbearable. She would not stay there. She went downstairs, and found Miss Aldclyffe had gone into the breakfast room, but that Captain Aldclyffe, who rose later with increasing infirmities, had not yet made his appearance. Cytherea entered. Miss Aldclyffe was looking out of the window, watching a trail of white smoke along the distant landscape signifying a passing train. At Cytherea's entry she turned and looked inquiry. I must tell you now, apostrophe began Cytherea, in a tremulous voice. Well, what? Apostrophe, Miss Aldclyffe said. I am not going to stay with you. I must go away a very long way. I am very sorry, but indeed I can't remain. Apostrophe, pooh, what shall we hear next? Apostrophe, Miss Aldclyffe surveyed Cytherea's face with leisurely criticism. You are breaking your heart again about that worthless young Springrove. I knew how it would be. It is as Hallam says of Juliet, what little reason you may have possessed originally has all been whirled away by this love. I shan't take this notice, mind. Apostrophe, do let me go. Apostrophe, Miss Aldclyffe took her new pet's hand, and said with severity, as to hindering you, if you are determined to go, of course that's absurd. But you are not now in a state of mind fit for deciding upon any such proceeding, and I shall not listen to what you have to say. Now, Cythie, come with me. We'll let this volcano burst and spend itself, and after that we'll see what had better be done. Apostrophe, she took Cytherea into her workroom, opened a drawer, and drew forth a roll of linen. This is some embroidery I began one day, and now I should like it finished. Apostrophe, she then preceded the maiden upstairs to Cytherea's own room. There, apostrophe, she said, Now sit down here, go on with this work, and remember one thing, that you are not to leave the room on any pretext whatever for 2 hours, unless I send for you, I insist kindly, dear. Whilst you stitch, you are to stitch, recollect, and not go mooning out of the window, think over the whole matter, and get cooled. Don't let the foolish love affair prevent your thinking as a woman of the world. If at the end of that time you still say you must leave me, you may. I will have no more to say in the matter. Come, sit down, and promise to sit here the time I name. Apostrophe, to hearts, in a despairing mood, compulsion seems a relief, and docility was at all times natural to Cytherea. She promised, and sat down. Miss Alcliffe shut the door upon her and retreated. She sewed, stopped to think, shed a tear or two, recollected the articles of the treaty, and sewed again, and at length, fell into a reverie which took no account whatever of the lapse of time. 4. 10 to 12 o'clock a.m. A quarter of an hour might have passed, when her thoughts became attracted from the past to the present by unwonted movements downstairs. She opened the door and listened. There were hurryings along passages, opening and shutting of doors, trampling in the stable yard. She went across into another bedroom, from which a view of the stable yard could be obtained, and arrived there just in time to see the figure of the man who had driven her from the station vanishing down the coach road on a black horse galloping at the top of the animal's speed. Another man went off in the direction of the village. Whatever had occurred, it did not seem to be her duty to inquire or meddle with it, stranger and dependent as she was, unless she were requested to, especially after Miss Alcliffe's strict charge to her. She sat down again, determined to let no idle curiosity influence her movements. Her window commanded the front of the house, and the next thing she saw was a clergyman walk up and enter the door. All was silent again till, a long time after the first man had left, he returned again on the same horse, now matted with sweat and trotting behind a carriage in which sat an elderly gentleman driven by a lad in livery. These came to the house, entered, and all was again the same as before. The whole household, master, mistress, and servants appeared to have forgotten the very existence of such a being as Cytherea. She almost wished as he had not vowed to have no idle curiosity. Half an hour later, the carriage drove off with the elderly gentleman, and two or three messengers left the house, speeding in various directions. Rustics in smock frocks began to hang about the road opposite the house, or lean against trees, looking idly at the windows and chimneys. A tap came to Cytherea's door. She opened it to a young maid servant. Miss Alcliffe wishes to see you, ma'am. ... Cytherea hastened down. Miss Alcliffe was standing on the hearthrug, her elbow on the mantel, her hand to her temples, her eyes on the ground, perfectly calm, but very pale. Cytherea, ... she said in a whisper, come here. ... Cytherea went close. Something very serious has taken place, ... she said again, and then paused, with a tremulous movement of her mouth. Yes, ... said Cytherea. My father. He was found dead in his bed this morning. ... Dead. ... echoed the younger woman. It seemed impossible that the announcement could be true, that knowledge of so great a fact could be contained in a statement so small. Yes, dead, ... murmured Miss Alcliffe solemnly. He died alone, though within a few feet of me. The room we slept in is exactly over his own. ... Cytherea said hurriedly, do they know at what hour? ... The doctor says it must have been between 2 and 3 o'clock this morning. ... Then I heard him. ... Heard him? ... Heard him die. ... You heard him die? What did you hear? ... A sound I heard once before in my life at the deathbed of my mother. I could not identify it, though I recognized it. Then the dog howled. You remarked it. I did not think it worth while to tell you what I had heard a little earlier. She looked agonized. It would have been useless, said Miss Aldcliffe. All was over by that time. She addressed herself as much as Cytherea when she continued. Is it a providence who sent you here at this juncture, that I might not be left entirely alone? Till this instant Miss Aldcliffe had forgotten the reason of Cytherea's seclusion in her own room. So had Cytherea herself. The fact now recurred to both in one moment. Do you still wish to go? Said Miss Aldcliffe anxiously. I don't want to go now, Cytherea had remarked simultaneously with the other's question. She was pondering on the strange likeness which Miss Aldcliffe's bereavement bore to her own. It had the appearance of being still another call to her, not to forsake this woman so linked to her life, for the sake of any trivial vexation. Miss Aldcliffe held her almost as a lover would have held her, and said musingly, we get more and more into one groove. I now am left fatherless and motherless as you were. Other ties lay behind in her thoughts, but she did not mention them. You loved your father, Cytherea, and wept for him? Yes, I did. Poor Papa. I was always at variance with mine, and can't weep for him now. But you must stay here always, and make a better woman of me. The compact was thus sealed, and Cytherea, in spite of the failure of her advertisements, was installed as a veritable companion. And, once more in the history of human endeavor, a position which it was impossible to reach by any direct attempt, was come to by the seeker swerving from the path, and regarding the original object as one of secondary importance. Via. The events of 18 days, 1. August the 17th, the time of day was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The place was the lady's study or boudoir, Knapwater House. The person was Miss Aldcliffe sitting there alone, clothed in deep mourning. The funeral of the old captain had taken place, and his will had been read. It was very concise, and had been executed about 5 years previous to his death. It was attested by his solicitors, Messrs. Nyttleton and Tayling, of Lincoln's Inn Fields. The whole of his estate, real and personal, was bequeathed to his daughter Cytherea, for her sole and absolute use, subject only to the payment of a legacy to the rector, their relative, and a few small amounts to the servants. Miss Aldcliffe had not chosen the easiest chair of her boudoir to sit in, or even a chair of ordinary comfort, but an uncomfortable, high, narrow-backed, oak-framed and seated chair, which was allowed to remain in the room only on the ground of being a companion in artistic quaintness to an old coffer beside it, and was never used except to stand in, to reach for a book from the highest row of shelves. But as he had sat erect in this chair for more than an hour, for the reason that she was utterly unconscious of what her actions and bodily feelings were. The chair had stood nearest her path on entering the room, and as he had gone to it in a dream. She sat in the attitude which denotes unflagging, intense, concentrated thought as if she were cast in bronze. Her feet were together, her body bent a little forward, and quite unsupported by the back of the chair. Her hands on her knees, her eyes fixed intently on the corner of a footstool. At last she moved and tapped her fingers upon the table at her side. Her pent-up ideas had finally found some channel to advance in. Motions became more and more frequent as she labored to carry further and further the problem which occupied her brain. She sat back and drew a long breath. She sat sideways and leant her forehead upon her hand. Later still she arose, walked up and down the room at first abstractedly, with her features as firmly set as ever, but by degrees her brow relaxed, her footsteps became lighter and more leisurely, her head rode gracefully, and was no longer bowed. She plumed herself like a swan after exertion. Yes, she said aloud. to get him here without letting him know that I have any other object than that of getting a useful man. That's the difficulty, and that I think I can master. Apostrophe apostrophe, she rang for the new maid, a placid woman of 40 with a few gray hairs. Ask Miss Gray if she can come to me. Apostrophe apostrophe, Cytherea was not far off, and came in. Do you know anything about architects and surveyors? Apostrophe apostrophe, said Miss Alcliffe abruptly. Know anything? Apostrophe apostrophe, replied Cytherea, poising herself on her toe to consider the compass of the question. Yes, know anything, apostrophe, said Miss Alcliffe. Owen is an architect and surveyor's draftsman, apostrophe, the maiden said, and thought of somebody else who was likewise. Yes. That's why I asked you. What are the different kinds of work comprised in an architect's practice? They lay out estates, and superintend the various works done upon them, I should think, among other things. Apostrophe apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.